Hey, Fed Heads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 62, Spotlight on Quattro Cinco 2.0, because we already did a 1.0 if you checked out our Christmas episode. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. We are broadcasting at CigarFederation.com, heard around the world, and picked up on every device that connects to the internet. And if you download our podcast, many devices that are not. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Robbie Rass. Rob, what's going on in sunny California today, brother?
Just living the dream, man. To borrow from our good friend Terrence Riley, living the dream. It's a beautiful day. It's been pretty beautiful in California the last few days. Actually, that last rainstorm came through over the weekend, and now it's 72 with wispy clouds, and it's beautiful out. This is why we pay extra to live here.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, we don't pay extra. Well, actually, that's not true. We do pay extra to live up in Calgary. And, we're getting our money's worth today because it's not 72, but it's probably in the high 50s right now. Sun's out, no wind. As you can see, I don't have a jacket on. So it's pretty nice out. I'm happy. It's good times to be smoking a cigar.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially for you. It's funny what you get used to. I mean, if I went somewhere where a nice day was 52 degrees, I don't know how well I'd handle it, but I'm spoiled, man. We don't get a whole lot of seasons out here in the Bay Area. So it's spring and fall for the most part, which just happened to be my favorite season. So that works out. But no, I'm looking forward to it, man. I went to all Irish whiskey with my lineup today, and we're smoking this nice Quattro Cinco, which we're going with this Petite Corona. So I'm nursing it a little bit just to make sure we've got enough cigar to get through the show. But no, I'm excited. Looking forward to this.
I'm just knocking my cigar all over myself today. It's like I've never smoked a cigar before or something. I don't know what's going on.
First time,
long time. So of course, the Quattro Cinco we've featured on the show before. We've done a bunch of reviews. It is this is the Reserva Especial, which is the follow-up to, I think it was the 2013 special edition first special edition that Hoya de Nicaragua had put out in their, at the time, 47 years of history. So that must mean they're coming up on a 50-year anniversary this year, I think, or next year. But that's going to be a heck of a party.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Longest running tobacco manufacturer in Nicaragua, which is really cool. And, of course, we got to see them when we were down there for the Cigar Safari. It's always a good time. We enjoy them. They're great people. They have a lot of history, and they share a lot of that history, which is really awesome. So today we're smoking the Petite Corona, and I did not write down the specs on the Petite Corona, so I think it's like a 4.5 by 44.
Well, if you know what, I've actually got an audience question that we could plug in right now if you want to go ahead and look that up. I'll fire up this audience question. This is from Eric Johnson. And he wants to know if either of us are noticing any difference from the Quattro Cinco in vitola difference between what we're smoking now and what we smoked in episode 49. And Eric, I'm going to take your word for it that it was episode 49. I'm not sure if it was. I have no idea. I have no reason to not believe you.
It was. It was, in fact, episode 49. Thank you very much for that.
Eric is on top of it. So I think we actually smoked the Toro, I believe, in that episode. And today we're smoking the Petite Corona, which...
4.5 by 46. So I was off on the ring gauge, but pretty close.
4.5 by 46. So this is a little guy. And so this is a good 45-50 minute smoke.
Yeah. So I may have erred in picking this cigar for an hour and a half long show, but regardless, we'll try and nurse this and get the most out of it. I think what throws me off, and we've talked about this, is it's a box press. And I'm really, really vibing on box presses, but it gives you an illusion. It makes the cigar vitola seem smaller, which is definitely a good thing when you're talking about really big cigars.
Yeah, and it's a real soft box press too, which is, I actually kind of prefer those the sharp box presses. I think they look cool depending on how they're presented. But
I think it'd take your eye out, man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. and for some cigars it works. They're not for me. It's not as comfortable. This brings me back to the Hedley Grange from Crowned Heads, and they called it a trunk press, where it's kind of that rounded box press. It's soft, and this is really along the same vein. I mean, you can see that if you're watching the video here. Not a very sharp press, but very, very comfortable to smoke. We were talking offline that there's some more woody characteristics to this cigar than we were getting before. It still has that rich backbone. that we experienced in the larger Vitolas. But it definitely has a bit more of an intense woody vibe to it. And John, you were saying that you think that comes from the binder a little bit.
Yeah, I think, one of the big differences between the original and the new one, and one of the ones I was not looking forward to, is they changed up the binder. They went, because the original, and it makes sense being a Nicaraguan company, the original was a Nicaraguan Puro, so it was all Nicaraguan tobacco. In the follow-up, they switched it up with the binder, went with the Dominican binder. And, I'm kind of a little bit of a hater sometimes in Dominican tobacco, and I think only because, I've smoked some Dominican cigars that haven't hit my palate quite right. But that being said, that was a long way to get to the point.
Let me jump in before you actually get to your point, because it's almost like you read these questions in advance, even though you don't have access to them. We have a question from Jeff Madre about this very thing. He says he's curious about the Dominican binder. Is there any of that Dominican quote unquote twang that you can detect from this?
So that's so funny. So, I'm a bit poo poo on Dominican. And I think for me, Dominican tobacco has to be quite a bit better than what a lot of people would really enjoy out of a Dominican cigar. So when I saw that they're using Dominican binder, I was like, I kind of went into the review and went into the smoke experience anticipating a not great experience. And what I got was, wow, this is even better than the original Nicaraguan Puro. So, what he's talking about is, sometimes you get maybe a little bit of a citrus twang quality to a lot of Dominican tobaccos. And I don't get that out of the Cuatro Cinco, but I do think that the Dominican, I guess for a better lack of explanation, rounds out the profile a little bit better than the original blend did. And so for me, the Reserva Especial is in fact a better cigar than the original release, which, is kind of blasphemy.
Well, there you have it, Jeff. That's there is a little bit, it does lend itself to a bit of a different profile, but that twang that you're talking about seems to be absent. I don't really pick up much of that either. I'm not as familiar with this cigar as you are, to where I can say, well, this is better than the original version because of this, that, and the other. I've enjoyed both of them. I haven't enjoyed them to the level that you have, in the sense that I've gone out and picked up more. I haven't done that. But I have had more experience with this Reserva Especial. It's a damn good cigar.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say, though, I think that I like the larger ring gauge a little bit better. And it felt like that was the body that I was getting out of that, and the flavor profile was a bit more rounded out, I guess. And maybe I'm saying that because you just said that, but it this has a bit more of that spike of that woody note, and there's a little bit of extra spice on this one that, obviously you're going to get when you go into a smaller ring gauge. So I think the larger ring gauge actually performed a little bit better. But again, I'm only, half an inch into this thing, so maybe that'll change by the end of the show.
I'm getting a lot of chocolate, which I certainly was picking up in the original release, but I think that, I get that initial woody note, and then I get a lot of chocolate behind it. So I don't remember getting that much chocolate this up front on the original, the other sizes.
Interesting. Interesting. So let's jump into our first
pairing. Should we get into it?
Yeah, I think let me just double check here as far as audience questions. Those are probably the two best to get rid of, or to get rid of.
Get rid of. questions, audience.
Those are the two best, I think, to address before we get into our pairings. And we've got a few more. So again, thanks for posting your questions. You can post your questions if you're watching the show live, or a day in advance, you can come post your questions to the Q&A app. If you go through CigarFederation.com, there's a link on the Sharing Our Pairings page. It takes you right where you need to be to post a question. If you can't get that to work, you can always email questions to Rob at Cigar Federation or John at Cigar Federation if you've got some questions you want addressed as in regards to pairing. So we always like it when you guys post those questions, so keep them coming.
So first up, we're kind of switching things up. We got a bunch of funky whiskeys going on. I didn't go pure Scotch whiskey. I went with starting up with one of my favorites from Japan. Good old Japanese whiskey here. From Nikawiska Company. It's from the Miyagikyo Distillery. We've talked about Miyagikyo in the past on our Japanese 1.0 and Japanese 2.0 show. They're founded in 1969, which is not that old compared to a lot of distilleries in Ireland, certainly not in Scotland, but pretty old by world distillery standards. Founded by Masataka Takatsuru, who founded the first distillery in Japan, the Yamazaki, which I'm sure everyone knows at this point. They located in the mountains of Sendai, which is in northern Japan. Very mountainous region, so very crisp air, very fresh water, which is why he picked that, you know, always looking for the water source. So it doesn't really use as much peaty malt as their other distillery, which is the Yoichi. We've talked about Yoichi in the past. And interestingly enough, it uses a pot still with indirect steam versus a direct steam, which a lot of the Scottish distilleries do, and I think a lot of the Irish distilleries do. We'll talk a little bit about that as the show goes on. The facility has an enormous amount of stills. They have 8 pot stills, and I'll talk a little bit about why that's relevant later. They also have 2 pairs of coffee stills. Coffee stills are used for continuous distilling and usually used for blended malts and single grain whiskeys. They have an annual production, which is amazing, 5 million liters or 1.3 million freedom gallons, which is, that's a lot. I mean, that's probably larger than I would say 30% or 40% of the Scottish distilleries. And what's so cool about this is it's 45%, which, you know, I love those bigger whiskeys. And it was matured in ex-sherry casks. So you can see it's got that nice golden color. Unfortunately, I believe they add coloring to this, which is kind of a drag. But it's delicious, and I'm going to take some sips while you talk about your first dram.
Absolutely. I'm starting – I went all Irish whiskey today. And I'm probably starting with my favorite of the bunch, but – I'm doing this for a reason because I want to end with a specific one. But just got my hands on this, and this is the Green Spot single pot still Irish whiskey from, I guess it's Mitchell & Sons.
Mitchell & Sons, yep.
Yeah, in Dublin. And this comes out of the Middleton Distillery. And the Middleton Distillery actually has kind of an interesting – I'm just reading through their website. Now, if you want to check out this website, there's a ton of information here. And there's, you know, 4 different whiskeys that they talk about. Redbreast, which I've had and I really enjoy. Spot, where there's a Green Spot and a Yellow Spot, a couple other ones. There's a Powers and Middleton. And they all come out of the Middleton Distillery, and they're all single pot stills, which, John, you're going to talk about that in a minute.
Absolutely.
The Middleton Distillery it was founded back in 1796. And the interesting thing is their main building and their main water wheel were built for the purposes to be a woolen mill. But the woolen mill enterprise, they say, was short-lived, and the buildings were sold to the British government, who adapted the complex to a military barracks during the Napoleonic Wars of 1803 to 1815. So that's
a lot of history.
Yeah, it's just kind of cool to read some of this stuff. And their website has a ton of information on it. So definitely, if you're interested in this at all, and I'm kind of geeking out on it a little bit. I mean, this is definitely more your wheelhouse, John, than mine, but still very cool. And anyway, following the departure of the British Army, the site was purchased by James Murphy, who commenced his distilling business. And in 1825, the first spirits were distilled at the Middleton Distillery. Still use the same location to this day. And like I said, they've got 4 different brands that come out of this one. It's Redbreast, Spot, Powers, and Middleton. I haven't had Powers and Middleton that I can remember. I may have tried them when I was over in Ireland. That was the first time I tried Green Spot. I remember Dana and I are flying home, and it's like 9 in the morning, and we're at the airport in Dublin, and they've got the duty-free area where they've got all these Irish whiskeys. And ladies, they're just, she's like, oh, so you want to try some of this stuff? I'm like, lady, it's 9 o'clock. I don't want to try anything right now. But she's pouring all these little shots, and I tasted maybe 5 or 6 different Irish whiskeys at 9:30 in the morning. So by the time we got on the flight, I was like, woohoo! But the one that we couldn't try was Green Spot because they didn't have a bottle of it open or whatever. But I wanted to buy it, and I don't know why we were drawn to it. And this was duty free, and since we were flying Aer Lingus and we changed airplanes at one point, we couldn't take duty free on the flight.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, so it was kind of a bummer. So we've been looking for it ever since, and It's not readily available in the States. I believe that you can find it certain places. I actually picked it up from a website called Caskers that I've never purchased from before, but I get their emails all the time. And heading into St. Patrick's Day, they had free shipping all the single pot Irish whiskeys, the stuff that I was just talking about. And Green Spot was on there, so I figured, what the hell, I'll get a bottle of it since it's free shipping. And very, very pleased with it. It's got a real nice flavor to it. Just to talk a little bit about the Green Spot itself. 40% alcohol by volume. Everything that I'm having today is 40%. Let's see. It's a non-age statement, single pot Irish whiskey, and it's comprised of pot still whiskeys aged between 7 and 10 years. The whiskey has matured in a combination of new bourbon and refill bourbon casks, as well as sherry casks. That's why I love it. You get a sherry mm-hmm. cask in there, I'm down for the cause.
Mm-hmm.
It says only small quantities of green spot are bottled each year. No real reason why. Drink some more and we'll bottle some more.
I have an answer for that.
Oh, you do? Well, okay. Let me talk about some of the tasting notes here and then we'll go from there. But again, check out the website. It's singlepotstill.com. And they've got all the information that you're going to want on all these. It's really, really cool. The nose on this, fresh aromatic oils and spices with orchard fruits and barley on a background of toasted wood, which is a very well-written sentence.
Sounds delightful.
And it's quite on point. This is really, really sweet to me. They say it's spicy. It's got a full spicy body, which it does. It's got some spice to it, but there's such a fruity sweetness.
Uh-huh.
And it's so smooth. It's almost too easy to drink. And I really enjoy it. My wife and I are like, we just got this bottle and we've put a pretty good dent into
snap.
It. Yeah. So, I'm going to have to find some more free shipping and order a few more bottles. But John, go into a little bit of detail on single pot stills.
Before we do that, I just want to remind our audience that they are tuned in to Sharing Our Pairings episode 62, Spotlight on Cuatro Cinco 2.0 or DOS if you are speaking Espanol. And I certainly do not speak Espanol. No bueno. We are broadcast around the world. We are broadcasting the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners who are tuned out there listening to my hilarious Spanish, my terrible, terrible Spanish, even though I've traveled everywhere in Central America and Cuba and all over. Still haven't learned, slowly but surely. So we're talking about some whiskey pairings with Cuatro Cinco and talking about the Irish pot still whiskey. So it's really fascinating to me, whiskey manufacturing. So pot still, which is used in Scotch whiskey making and in Irish pot still whiskey making and in other kinds of Irish whiskey, it's basically just a giant copper pot. And everyone's probably seen a picture of it at one time or another. It's just this huge, huge copper pot. There's a reason that they use copper because copper is reactive, extremely reactive. So it removes some of the impurity of the wash and it removes some of the bacteria, et cetera, when the spirit's in there. Of course, because it's a giant copper pot, it also moves temperature through really well. So it's an easy and effective way to heat your spirit inside, presumably without catching fire. What pot still whiskey is specifically, is it uses malted but also unmalted barley versus a Scotch whiskey, which is 100% malted barley. Why is that? Well, here's where the government ruins everything for you. Back in the day, the British government taxed the Irish whiskey manufacturing based on how much barley they were using, malted barley they were using in their distilling. So the Irish, being a very smart people, realized, well, why don't we just use a bunch of unmalted barley and save a bunch of money on our whiskey making? And that's what we'll do. And to this day, there's still a small number, and the green spot is one of the few, I think there's only three or four that are left, that still use that process. So they use, you know, like 40, 50, 60% malted barley, but then the rest is unmalted barley. So it's a different process. It's a unique process, but it's a process that gives that spirit a quality that you can't get with any other spirit. And that's why it's really cool. So you're talking about the bright fruity character. And that's one of the big things, is that unmalted barley, when it gets mixed in with the malted barley during the distillation process, it brings out this really bright fruity quality. And then this, you know, rich spiciness. And I'm sure it's helped by the sherry casks. Of course, being an Irish whiskey, it's almost certainly been distilled, triple distilled.
Mm-hmm.
Most Scotch distillation is only 2 times or 2.5 times. Although we have talked about some of the distilleries in Scotland, there's a handful that do triple distill. Of course, every time you distill the spirit, you get a cleaner spirit, but you're losing a little bit of the character, a little bit of the quality. Why all of this is relevant is because the shape and size and all of the sort of dimensions of that still determine the quality and type of that spirit. So in Scotch spirit making, you'll do this huge, huge pot still. You'll collect low wines, which is the initial distillate that comes off. And then you put it in a second, much smaller still, which they call a spirit still. So they call a pot still a wash still, and they call their smaller pot still, they call it a spirit still, and that allows them to set the size and the neck and the thickness of that still, and all of those qualities determine the type of spirit you're getting out. So, for example, with an Islay spirit, I'm just geeking out for days here. So, for an Islay spirit like a Lagavulin or a Laphroaig, they use a short, squat, fat spirit still. But for like a Glenmorangie, which is a really delicate, very light, it's a very, very tall, very skinny spirit still. And that gives you the really fruity, light characteristics because the spirit has to travel the entire neck of that still before it getting out. So all of that factors into how that final spirit gets made. And it's really cool. I would love to hang out with a distillery master and go through the process. I'm sure there's a very select few that get to do that, but very, very cool. Cool process.
Yeah, it's when Dane and I were in Ireland, we went to the Jameson distillery and kind of did the tour and everything. We'll talk about Jameson here in a minute because those are my next two drams that I'll be pouring. But really, really interesting. It was a long time ago, so I don't remember most of it. But it was a lot of fun to check that out, and really happy I was able to get my hands on this. And I'll talk about the pairing because I was able to do that while you were preaching. For the record, I didn't even tell John that he was going to talk about this before the show. I just assumed that he knew it.
Well, okay. Just a side note. What was cool is I was at a private tasting last weekend, and it was a guy from Islay who was doing the, and he went like to the level of molecular biology on the whole process and talked in great depth on the still. And I don't know if a lot of people there were really interested, but I was glued to my seat. I was like, this is really, really cool knowledge I've never heard before. So anyways, carry on.
You were the one guy at a tasting who brought out your notebook and you're taking notes.
Absolutely.
It's like you're back in college. You got your little recorder, you put it on the thing and you're taking notes.
It's very cool.
I mean, we did back in the day. I don't think they do that anymore, but anyway, talk about this pairing. This pairing is really freaking good. And it's good because I'm getting contrasting flavor notes from from each component here. Yeah. The whiskey is giving me that kind of spicy body up front, and it finishes with that sweet fruity note. And it's a citrusy fruit, and there's probably even some green apple really in there on that finish. But it's really bright and it's really sweet for me. And so I feel like I could just sit down and drink this bottle and like literally like just in a day. Like I feel like I could just do it.
Three times distilled, three times is dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just so freaking smooth and it's so good. And it's not even that expensive. It was like $60 for the bottle.
That's super reasonable.
Yeah. I'm almost kind of glad that I can't just go down the street and buy it. But that's not really a laughing matter, but I'm glad that I can't. So I start with that spicy body from the green spot, and it finishes up with that clean, sweet, bright, fruity notes. And when I go in and I take a puff of the cigar, it's almost like I have that clean palate where I can reintroduce that rich backbone of flavor that you get from the Cuatro Cinco. And there's some of that, those woody notes are in there as well, but there's that chewy, sweet finish that when I go and I follow that up with another sip of the green spot, I'm hit with that spicy body again, where it kind of plays in like one long, it's almost like a linear expression of flavor that is finished up by that bright sweetness from linear expression of flavor. Look at that. I could spin a yarn, huh?
Spin it.
That was beautiful. But anyway, it's the kind of pairing that I want to keep talking about, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely. And I think, interestingly enough, we're getting a very similar tasting experience because, and part of the reason I like Japanese whiskeys and they fit within my profile is it's a very different spirit than anything I'd get in Scotland. So I think we're getting a very similar tasting experience here because I'm getting a ton of, you know, bright stone fruit, very sweet stone fruit, little bit of spiciness. And as you say, it's just a beautiful contrast to this cigar, which is, it's not in your face, but it's, you know, it's a Nicaraguan cigar. It's got that spice. It's got that leather. It's got that chewiness. It's got that deep earthiness. And as you say, you know, you take a puff of the cigar, you get all that cigar component, take a sip of the whiskey, you get all this bright, refreshing character to your palate. And it really does. Yeah. It really does bring your palate back for another puff of the cigar. Maybe not the right length of cigar for these whiskeys, cause you could see yourself going through the cigar pretty darn quick.
No, the way you just described it is it's almost like that bright, fruity flavor that finishes, that finish on the whiskey kind of wakes up your palate, if that makes sense. And then you take that next step into those deeper, chewier, earthier flavors and that spice. And then your palate is woken back up by that, that fruity finish and that sweetness. That is, this is really freaking good. And I'm really glad. I almost didn't grab this because I know if Dana saw that I took this bottle out here for the show, she might get a little upset. So we'll keep that on the down low. I've got a question here actually from Eric Johnson that fits right into what you were just talking about, and maybe you can extrapolate on this a little bit. Eric wants to know, he says, "Hey, fellas, what do you guys think of Japanese whiskey? How do you think it measures up in particular to Scotch?" And you were just kind of on the verge of answering that question. So I'm glad that you didn't. So now you can.
I think that if you want some of the most authentic Scotch style whiskey in the world, you can get it from Japan. And I mean, that's a bold statement. I've got a lot of bottles of Scotch whiskey. As you know, I love Scotch whiskey. I am Scottish by descent. I have a, you know, big space in my heart for Scotland, but one of the things that Scotland has done really well is, and you know, they've taken this authentic Scotch experience and they brought it to Japan, and they've tried to, it's this interesting combination of modern technology, but done in a very, very traditional way. Everything in their distillery is done as traditional as possible to try and replicate Scotch whiskey. And I think, you know, obviously it's not Scotch because it's not made in Scotland, but I think it's a very authentic Scotch style whiskey. And I can get a lot of flavors and a lot of expressions out of Japan that I can't get out of Scotland. And the Miyagikyo expression, we've talked about the Yoichi and we've talked about the Yamazaki, and there's many different bottles and distilleries that all provide something you can't quite get out of a Scotch. So I love them, but do they replace Scotch? No. In the same way that I love Irish whiskey, it's got a place in my cabinet. It doesn't replace it. It's a supplement.
Yeah, I'm going to echo what you were just saying, because that was the first thought that I had was, well, they compare in the sense that they're single malt, that kind of thing, and there's a similar profile. But even for myself, and I am by no means any sort of expert, I'm a novice when it comes to Scotch, and even much more so when it comes to Japanese whiskey. But we'll do some blind tastings in my house, and I'll pour a few things and have Dana taste it and vice versa. And we've done some with some scotches and Japanese whiskeys that are kind of similar profile. And you can taste the difference in the same way that you can taste the difference between a Scotch and an Irish whiskey, or an Irish whiskey, or an Irish whiskey and a bourbon. So to say that it's a natural comparison, because the processes, at least the way that I understand them, and correct me if I'm wrong, are similar.
Identical.
But yeah. Okay. So there you go. But the outcome is different.
Yep.
So it's like, if I take all my ingredients to make a pasta sauce, and I know we've used this analogy before, and you take all the same ingredients and we spend the day making a sauce, your sauce is going to taste different than mine. Mm-hmm. Yours may be better. Mine may be better, but they're all the same stuff. I almost use a word that I couldn't use.
Awkward.
And all the same stuff, but you know, the outcome is different. The end product is different. And while there's some similarities, there's differences as well. It's just like, you know, compare a Kentucky bourbon with a Colorado whiskey, or a whiskey that's made in California, or a whiskey that's made in Washington. I mean, they're made all over the place, and you know, the process is pretty much the same. They're all called something a little bit different, but they all kind of fill a different. They all fill a different. They all check different boxes for me as far as the flavor and the experience is concerned. So, Eric, thanks for the question. But I mean, my advice to you would be to try some. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I know it's difficult. It's especially with Japanese whiskey nowadays. It's tough to find, and it's tough to find at a good price.
It's got a long way to travel.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and I know that can be kind of a tough nut if you're. You know, dropping $50, $60, $70, $80, $100, $200, $300 on a bottle if you want to go get some of that Chichibu the peated.
Chichibu.
Oh, girl.
So good.
Anyway. But yeah, let's, I've actually been letting my cigar go out. Is that wrong? So
it, no, because you know, we're nursing it. I mean, you know, it is a smaller Vitola. It's a more nuanced Vitola. So, you know, we don't want to run out of the cigar before the end of the show. I just want to remind our audience that they're tuning in to Sharing Our Pairings, episode 62. Spotlight on Cuatro Cinco 2.0 from Hoya de Nicaragua. We're doing some whiskey pairing today. I'm your host, John Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, as always, Robbie Rass. We are found on CigarFederation.com. You probably already know that, though, unless you're listening on our podcast, at which point we appreciate it. Give us a thumbs up, up thumbs, comment. Give us a little feedback, a little love. We're kind of hoping to hit 100 reviews on iTunes. So if you're listening via iTunes, give us a couple stars. You know, we're the only 5-star rated podcast cigar show on iTunes. So we'd like to keep that up. Give us some love. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And feedback too. I mean, it gives you an opportunity to write a review. If you think I say too much, which I do, let me know and I'll work on it. I'm working on it anyway, but I'll work on it harder if I see that there's a comment there.
Hurry hard.
Yeah, absolutely. When someone's holding me accountable, you know, you got to work a little bit harder. I'll jump into my next pairing here so you can get ready for yours.
Roger.
I'm sticking, like I said, Irish whiskey all day, every day. And I'm going with your standard basic Jameson Irish whiskey. Nothing special about this one. This is the bottle that you can pick up at your local grocery store or, you know, your local liquor store for 25, 26, 27 bucks. Jameson's been around for a long time, established in 1870 in Dublin, Ireland. And if you're ever if you get the opportunity to go to Ireland, take it. I'm not a world traveler by any means. I've been lucky the last few years to visit a few places. And of all the places that I've been to, I think the one that I yearn to go back to the most is Ireland. There's something about Dublin. It's such a cool town. It's like San Francisco because it's a big city, but it's just cleaner and safer, or feels like it anyway. People are nicer. Like there's something about that city I don't want to say I left part of me in that city because that's lame, but I yearn. I don't yearn for a lot of things. I yearn to go back to Dublin. And talk a little bit about Jameson. The original blend of pot still and fine grain whiskeys that is as versatile as it is smooth. It's triple distilled and it's aged for a minimum of 4 years. It's a timeless whiskey that turned our green bottle into an icon. And the bottle is definitely green. On the nose, you get a light floral note with some peppered and spicy wood notes and some sweet notes there as well. Check out their website too. It's just jamesonwhiskey.com. And they've got a bunch of videos and all kinds of different things where they talk about their process and all things like that. It's a very welcoming website, user-friendly with a lot of information. So I definitely encourage you guys to check it out. They talk about the process a lot in detail. and like I said, I was lucky enough to do the tour there. They actually have, at the end of the tour, they do a thing where you sit down and you do kind of a blind tasting in front of a group of people. And of course, Dana got selected to do it. And your taste, they have you taste like a Johnny Walker, a Jack Daniels, and a Jameson. And you kind of have to pick which one and talk about the different things that you're tasting. And she actually did a very good job. Those are three very different whiskeys, so probably pretty easy to tell them apart. But it's a lot of fun if you're there and you get a chance to check it out. And I actually had a bottle of the Distillery Reserve, which you can only get at – they have two distilleries in the world. This is the only places you can get it.
Nice.
Unfortunately, that's all gone now, but it was a lot of fun. I actually got these glasses there, my little Jameson glasses, which come home to find out that they do like a little holiday gift pack every year where you can get them. But I got mine in Ireland, so whatever.
That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm going to jump into this, get in on the nose a little bit. And it's so funny, man. We talked about the Glencairn glasses, and today I went sans Glencairn. I just went all regular glasses.
And, cowboying it up.
And I can't get much of a nose out of these things. It's so amazing what those glasses do. If you're drinking any kind of whiskey, buy some. And I don't get anything out of it if you buy them, but you're going to get a lot out of it. And they're only a couple of bucks. So definitely invest. But moving forward, let's go.
So I'm drinking one of my favorites. I'm bringing out the big guns, as I said in the chat, the Glenrothes. This is the 1988. So this bad boy was distilled in 1988, bottled in 2008. And it is good. It is one of the Glenrothes expressions that I really enjoy. That along with the 91, 92, and of course my birth year, the 1975, which is just an outstanding bottle. Everyone born in 1975, cool people. taking the nose on this, it's just, I mean, it's like Christmas fruit. It's just like Christmas pudding, just rich, rich, bright stewed fruit. I mean, it's, you just want to eat it. You don't even want to drink it. That's how fruity it is. And lots of spices underneath it. What's interesting is when I take a sip, and I'm going to take a sip and try and talk without gagging here. The palate isn't as strong as the nose. So you still get a really rich stewed fruit. I wouldn't say it's like a plum, but it you know, it's like you took a bunch of stone fruits and then stewed them up. So it's a little bit heartier, a little bit richer than the Miyagikyo, with a little bit of pepper and spice to chase it. So where the first whiskey we were tasting, I think, was very, very contrasting, this is moving a little bit more towards the center, as it were. Still very different than the profile you get off the cigar, but still works very well. I think, you know, this is what I would describe as a more medium plus bodied whiskey, and it stands up a little bit better to the cigar. Not a bad thing. I really enjoyed the first pairing, but this is a very different pairing experience. So enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I'm kind of on board with you here. This is very different. The Jameson has a more spicy, earthy, and mildly sweet flavor to it. There's some vanilla in there, but it's much more earthy, woody, and spicy. And so it actually pairs really well with this cigar in a very different way. And this is, again, I feel like I say this every week, but this is one of the things I love about this show, is these two whiskeys are very different.
Both from Ireland.
They come from the same continent, but they are or same island, but very, very different. And but the experience that I'm getting out of them is almost – it's almost equally pleasing, if that makes sense. This is the Jameson really, it kind of amplifies the flavors that I'm getting out of the cigar, because they both have that rich undertones. They both have that spice to them. They both have that earthiness to them. There's more sweetness that's coming out of the Jameson, and it's bringing out some of that chocolate sweetness that you were talking about, John, in the Cuatro Cinco. So it's a pleasing pairing. In a very different way. I feel like they take each other and they make each other a little bit better. I'm getting more spice out of the Jameson than I normally get. I'm getting a little bit more sweetness, more of that vanilla on the finish than I usually get from it. For me, Jameson is kind of a very basic whiskey, and I don't really reach for it too often. If I just want you know, a glass of whiskey, I usually don't really reach for Jameson. But although I will say I do reach for the Jameson Black Label when I do have it. I'm going to make sure that I name it correctly. The Select Reserve, the Black Barrel Select Reserve. That stuff's legit. But regular Jameson, it's always in the bar, but I don't reach for it that much. But I'm getting a lot more out of it because of the cigar, and I feel like I'm getting a little bit more out of the cigar, more in the way of that rich, earthy backbone that's there, and a little bit more of that chocolate sweetness that I wasn't getting before due to this pairing. So again, I don't know if it's quite as good as the pairing I was getting with the Green Spot, but it's very, very different.
So just a shout out to Coop, the most gentlemanly guy in the podcast industry. Coop being the wonderful guy he is, we had to reschedule him to next week. And he's such an accommodating guy. I just want to give him a shout out, because he was talking about maybe shipping, because we were going to have him on for the Soda Pop show, Sody Pop. And he was going to have it Soda Pop shipped to his hotel. And he's working really hard. And I said, Coop, for a guest, you're putting in all this effort to be a guest on a show. And it's just such a classy guy working really hard. We ended up rescheduling him for next week. So we'll have him on next week for the Soda Pop show. But it's just, you know, so funny, because Coop is just such a good guy working very hard to be on the show and accommodate as much as possible. And he's our guest. He's not even a host of the show, but that's just the kind of guy he is. Talking about this Cuatro Cinco, if you reveal the second band underneath, you can, and I don't know if you can see that because it's quite small, but, you know, send a shout out on the Twitters to Hoya de Nicaragua. You can visit their website. They've got all their information on there, where you can find them on social media. Hashtag Cuatro Cinco. And if you want to learn more about their history, they've got some really cool PowerPoint stuff. If you haven't seen it, you got to check it out. It goes through the history of the country and the history of Hoya. HoyaCigars.com. It is fantastic. I didn't talk about Glenrothes. They're a Speyside distillery. Founded in 1879, so going way back. They use the Ladies Well water source. They have 5 wash stills and 5 spirit stills. So that's a lot. And when you hear their production, you'll be stunned. They still produce 5.6 million barrels or a million liters, pardon me, of spirit a year, 1.48 million freedom gallons, which is a lot. So again, compare that to Mayaguiquio, which was producing 1.3 million freedom gallons, but had way more stills to work with. They were Berry Brothers. You might have heard of Berry Brothers. They do a lot of independent bottling. Berry Brothers has the license to release their bottling, and they're still owned. The distillery is still owned by Edrington, but the bottling is done by Berry Brothers. They describe the vintage 1988 as a combination of, because it is a combination of sherry oak finish whiskey with American oak. It's 20 years old, of course. And the vintages, so why is this a vintage versus, you know, the Glenrothes 20 or the Glenrothes 12? Well, that's how they do their whiskey, which is kind of unique on the marketplace. No one really does this. So this represents no more than 2% of their annual production. So when they do a vintage, it's a very limited amount of spirit that they have in there. They describe it as rich, full flavored with candied orange peel, fruit compote. And again, you know, talked about this. It is a very stewed fruit for me. Getting back to talking about your green spot, dialing it back to the beginning of the show, the reason that the green spot, there's so little bottling is because a lot of that green spot is actually used by Jameson in Jameson blends.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. It's funny, when I was looking at the Jameson website, I was kind of scanning through some of their history information. I saw that they mentioned Middleton, which is where that's the distiller, right? Yeah, Middleton is the single pot distillery for it's in Middleton, Ireland. So, it's interesting that I think you kind of noticed that in, especially in Scotch and things like and Irish whiskey, that it's and American whiskey too. There's, you start to see that so many places or so many different whiskeys or bourbons or scotches, they all come kind of out of the same place and they all kind of work together. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of that in the cigar industry too. And you start seeing some of those collaborations. I don't want to use the term incestual because it has a negative connotation to it, but there's a lot of overlap. Maybe that's a better way to put it. Overlap in these industries that to me, I think is really, really cool when there's a lot of people kind of pulling the rope in the same direction.
Getting back to these pairings, again, this Glenrothes is such a different pairing, and yet it works so brilliantly. And, you know, we go back to the Sharing Our Pairings episode 49, which was our Christmas show. We did a bunch of beers, and it worked really, really well with the Cuatro Cinco. And here we are with a very, very different beverage, going with whiskeys, going with Irish whiskeys, Japanese whiskeys, Scottish whiskeys. They're all seemingly to work. I mean, it's pretty impressive to take a cigar, especially a cigar that's definitely on the medium full spectrum, and find it's got a lot of different things that can go with it. Yes, a lot of them are contrasting, but it still works very, very well. Where the beers, I think, were a little bit more complimentary. We're going with contrasting a little bit today. Brilliant. Absolutely would crush a half box of Hoya Cuatro Cincos and any of these whiskeys.
It sounds like a good day. That sounds like a really good day. I'm digging these pairings so far. And the one that I felt was going to pair best is my last pairing. And do we want to jump into our last pairing, or do we want to take an audience question? What do you think?
I think we should take an audience question, get into a break, and then get into our last pairing.
Okay. Let's see. So this one's from Jeff Madre. Jeff is asking a cigar specific question here. It's more of an opinion question. He says the La Imperiosa is a recreation of the 2014 Las Calaveras blend, while the Cuatro Cinco Reserva Especial is a reblend of the original Cuatro Cinco Reserva Limitada Puro. What are your opinions on creating quote-unquote tribute cigars playing off previous releases? Now, one thing, and I saw you kind of chuckle there, John. I look at these two examples that he used there, to me, are different. I think there's a different motivation there. There's a different there's a difference. To me, the La Imperiosa was a recreation of the Las Calaveras, and John was very candid about that when we talked to him at IPCPR. If you haven't heard that interview, check it out. It's on our, you can find it on our YouTube channel. Just search on our channel, search for Crowned Heads at 2015 IPCPR. You'll be able to find it. And he was very candid. He said, look, you know, this was a blend that was popular. Everybody wanted it again. So we made it. And they called it La Imperiosa because they felt like they kind of had to. There's been differing opinions on that, where, you know, some people say that, well, the Las Calaveras was such a popular blend that they figured, well, what the hell, there's more money out there to make, let's make it. And even if that's the motivation, I'm not going to fault somebody for doing that. That's kind of what our economy is based on. Right. The Cuatro Cincos, to me, I look at it more of as a yearly release, or bi-yearly, however you want to say it. And it's a limited edition cigar that this one's different. It's got a different binder on it. It's got a different profile to it. That doesn't bother me, because I feel like if I were to go back and find some more of those original Reserva Limitadas, it's a different cigar. It's got a lot of the same profile, but there's some differences to it. I'm not bothered by either one. I think if there's a cigar that's great and you make it and people love it and you have the ability to make more of it, make more. That's my opinion.
So, I mean, we kind of live in a society where people like to reach a little bit to be offended by stuff. And
no.
You know, shocking, I know. And I think in a lot of ways, cigar smokers are very passionate people. Cigar manufacturers are very passionate people. So, you know, people resonate to a brand. They get very worked up about a particular release or brand. And I think it was, I've heard this actually from both Skip Martin and Fred Rui of Nomad Cigars. I think Fred was even talking about this last week when he had him on the show. Truly, a cigar is really limited already. It's limited by the amount of filler tobacco you can get. It's limited by the binder you can get. It's limited by the wrapper you can get. Sometimes you can re-release that cigar if you can get your hands on some more of that special secret sauce tobacco you got originally. Sometimes you can. In the case of the Cuatro Cinco, I don't know why they re-blended it. Maybe the binder they were using was really expensive. Maybe it was hard to get. Maybe they just didn't live up to the quality of the original blend. They went with a different binder. So it's essentially a re-release, but it's not the original release. And they didn't call it a limited edition. The original one was truly limited. And, you know, Tohoya's respect, that was the first limited cigar they released in 47 years history. So hard to knock them. But, you know, at its heart, do I care if a company releases a limited edition cigar and then a year later, 2 years later, comes back with it again? Hell no. I'm happy that I love cigars. When I find a limited edition cigar, my first thought is, oh my God, I better get as many of these as I can, because I may never get it again. And if they can somehow find a way to get the tobacco together and re-release that, and it provides a similar quality, I'm all for it. I'm not going to complain. I don't care if the quote unquote value of my cigars has gone down. I'm a smoker first. I'm a collector second. Keep releasing those great cigars. That's my thought.
Now, you touched on a point that I kind of ignored in my little rant, and I'll address it here. If you are a collector and there's a cigar that comes out and it's, you know, this is our 2014 limited edition, this is the only time we're making it, and the company makes a big deal to say, this is it. Once the cigar is gone, it's gone. And then they turn around a year and a half later and make it into a regular production. That would bother me a little bit, especially if I'm going out of my way, I'm buying stuff on the secondary market, which I don't ever do. But but people do that, and there's a lively secondary market for whiskey, for cigars, for wine, for beer. There's a secondary market. There's a secondary market for everything, and there always will be. But I don't necessarily invest in that kind of thing. But that could be a part that would chap my business a little bit if that were the case. And I know a lot of people said that about the Crowned Heads release. To me, and even right now, like the cigars are actually kind of different. If you smoke the Las Calaveras and then you smoke the La Imperiosa, they didn't have the exact same feel to me. The La Imperiosa felt a bit more aggressive to me. But frankly, I didn't really like either one of them. And I think Logan and I were the first people to review the 2014 Las Calaveras, and I don't think either one of us really enjoyed it. Although I did say, if you go back into my review, I said, this isn't really in my wheelhouse, but this is going to be their most successful cigar. And son of a gun, I think I was right.
People are going nuts over it.
Yeah, so there's that. Do I care? No. But this also kind of goes back to a conversation that we had with Claudio from Mombacho on Cigar Chat about
Mombacho
about vintage. And, you know, if you put the vintage, a vintage statement on a cigar, because we talked about it. If I find a particular cigar that's blended every year and it's a consistent cigar, we'll use the Rocky Patel Decade, for example. If I find an older version, it's going to taste better to me because, I mean, the blend actually did change a little bit. But the way to keep track of that is you put the vintage on that cigar. So I know if I smoke a Hoya Red vintage 2014 and I liked it, there was this particular profile that I enjoyed or whatever, and it's got that vintage 2014 band on it. And then the next year there's the vintage 2015 and I smoke it and it's a little bit different because it's going to be, you've got different crops of tobacco in there. It could be the exact same blend, but it's going to taste different. So I know that if I want to get that 2014 vintage, I can always go back and find it, or I at least know that that was the year it was made. That's a change or a trend in the industry that I would really like to see. And I think it addresses this type of question.
Yeah. And I mean, we'll move on, but as you said, I mean, the tobacco is grown from year to year, or from season to season. It's going to change. It's a living plant. It changes. The blend changes. It's not going to always be what it was. You can get it very close, but it's not always going to be what it was. So I'm going to hop into my last pairing here. This is the Big Bad Boy. This is, I've had this on the show before. This is from Springbank, one of the distilleries that I think gets overlooked almost to a criminal level in the marketplace. This is their 17 Sherry Wood, 100% aged in sherry barrels. And it is a cask strength, which, you know, I love that cask strength, 53.1%. I've talked at length about Springbank, founded in 1828. So very old distillery, only have two wash stills and two spirit stills. And yet they still produce 2 million liters of alcohol per year. How many freedom gallons is that? Well, it's 528,000 freedom gallons. You know, you and I are definitely in the same wheelhouse when it comes to a lot of whiskeys, especially when you add sherry. This is one of the better, possibly one of the, you know, top five, top six sherried whiskey expressions out there for me. It's just, it's a very full bodied sherry expression that doesn't blow you away. Cause sometimes you can get a sherried expression that's really, really spicy. And this is more of that sweet, rich sherry without so much of the spice. And on the nose, I mean, just tons of spicy orange, and that, you know, that you nose it and you immediately know it's a sherry cask, and it's very full bodied. Because it is a 53%, which is very strong. So it's a very different experience than the first whiskey, which was quite nuanced, quite light, quite delicate. The second one, which is kind of in the middle, this is approaching the full. So this is almost more complementary to the cigar, and yet still works really, really well because I'm getting totally different flavors from the whiskey than I am from the cigar, and they're playing off of each other brilliantly. I'm actually getting a lot more of that almost a toasted cedar at the halfway point here.
I love that smell, that sherry cask smell. Oh God. If they made that into a cologne, I'd wear it and just sniff myself all day.
All day long.
There's an image. but we'll move forward.
Moving on.
Nothing to see here. My final pairing of the day is an interesting one, and I'll send a shout out to Aaron Loomis for this particular bottle. Aaron attended our annual Halloween bash at the Double R household. And classy guy as he is, he showed up with a bottle of Jameson Caskmates.
Nice.
And this is aged in craft beer barrels. This is the stout edition. Now, they don't have any other, there's no other editions of the Caskmates available as of yet. But this was their first release, and this came out this past year, 2015. And I was very eager to try this. And when he showed up with a bottle of it, I was very excited. And we ended up, you know, it's funny. We cracked it open that night. You can see that half the bottle is gone. And I haven't touched this bottle since. So we had a really good time at the Halloween party. But, and it's not that I haven't touched it since because I didn't like it. I haven't touched it since because the night of the Halloween party, we actually have a bar out in front in our living room that we keep, you know, mainly our main bottles in. And then we've got like a secondary bar, if you will, satellite bar. That's in one of the closets that has a lot of mixers and things like that in it. And this got put in the secondary bar. And I completely forgot that I even had it because obviously we drank a lot of it that first night and I didn't remember it the next day. So, which doesn't happen very often because as we say, drink better, drink less. That night I drank more. We're coming up on our end here. So I'm going to finish up on my little, my little spiel here. But just to give an idea, this is it's regular Jameson, which I had just a second ago, re-aged or aged, secondary aged in some craft beer barrels with some stout barrels. Just a little bit of the info here. It was emerging between a conversation that they had from Cork's Franciscan Well Brewery and Jameson, the Jameson Brewers. Cork's, apparently, they use the Jameson barrels to age some of their dry Irish stout. And so what Jameson did was when they got those barrels back, they put some of their Irish whiskey in there. And nice. Really what it does is it brings out a really unique flavor in the whiskey. You get a little bit of cocoa on the finish, and you get there's some coffee notes in there. They say you're going to taste some essence of hops in there. I don't taste any hops. But it's funny because I was getting kind of an almond-type flavor, and they mentioned marzipan in there, and that's exactly what it tastes like. And I love that flavor. A little bit of sweet almond and some cocoa on the finish. It gives a stronger body to the standard Jameson. Also, it's 40% alcohol by volume, so it doesn't bump up the alcohol content at all. But it just adds a little bit of body to it that just makes it really interesting. And just to go into the pairing, because I was sipping while John was talking, that cocoa on the finish, I was really hoping that was going to marry well with the cocoa that comes out of this, out of the Hoya cigar. Just lost the name of the cigar we're smoking.
Quattro Cinco.
The Quattro Cinco completely escaped my mind. We're three shots in, so I beg your pardon. But the pairing here, and this is exactly what I was hoping for, and this is why I had it last, is that extra body in the Jameson really lends itself well to a very linear experience, starting from a sip of the Jameson, a puff of the cigar, and then a sip of the Jameson. Like, I could keep going for days and days with the way that these flavors marry together. There's a little bit of extra body, a little bit of extra earthiness there. That cocoa on the finish really bodes well with the body from the cigar and that little bit of cocoa. It's kind of brought to the forefront from the cigar. Very, very pleased with this pairing.
So I would say, now that I've had many, many sips of the Springbank, delicious. Not as good as the Migikyo. I think, you know, it's interesting every time I do a show, what my expectations are and what actually happens. So the Glenrothes was definitely clear number two. The Migikyo was just so delicate and such a contrast to the cigar. It's my clear, hands-down winner of the night. That just that fresh fruit, and as you said, cleanses the palate, gets me ready for the cigar, and it's a beautiful pairing with the cigar. I think I'm going to have to revisit a bunch of Japanese whiskeys, and who knows, maybe we'll do a Quattro Cinco 3.0 after the IPCPR with some more Japanese whiskeys and see just how that works with other Japanese whiskeys. But for me, hands down, winner of the night.
Yeah, I know we're up against it. For me, my favorite is the Green Spot, not by much over the Caskmates. The Jameson Caskmates, the pairing is really, really nice. It's more complementary. The Green Spot was more of, these are so different, but they work together so well. The Jameson is the regular Jameson is a distant third, but it was still a good pairing. If you kind of rewind the show, I was kind of waxing poetic about all three of them. So so far I don't feel like we've had a dud pairing with this Quattro Cinco. So I think there's definitely at least a 3.0, maybe a 4.0. Who knows?
There you go. Quattro Cinco pairs with a lot of different things. We'll have to keep pushing the envelope. Maybe we'll do some bourbon next. Maybe we'll do some port next. Who knows? Appreciate everyone tuning in. Appreciate all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners who are out there. As Rob says, you guys are built to do things. You guys and girls are built to do things that we are not built to do. We appreciate you out there protecting our freedoms. Yes, even up here in Canada. Appreciate you protecting our freedoms. We'll be back next week with Coop from Stogie Geeks. We'll be doing some soda pop pairings. That'll be a good one to check out. And of course, this Thursday, we'll have Fred Rui from Nomad Cigars. As we always say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. So yeah, I mean, this Quattro Cinco is so versatile. So versatile. And, you know, I shouldn't say that with such a surprised tone, because I love so much of the product that comes out of the Hoya factory, even stuff that they're now making for other companies. I really, really enjoy, but what a versatile cigar.
Yeah. You know, to go back, to kind of go back, well, I'll go back later. This cigar, I mean, you've talked about this cigar for a while, and I kind of feel about this cigar the way you probably feel about the Oscar Blues, Death by Coconut. You know, the way I talk about that cigar or that beer and you finally got your hands on it, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I know what you've been talking about with the cigar. It's, and I've smoked it. We were like, I mean, obviously, like I said, we've said a couple of times, the folks from Drew Estate and Hoya were nice enough to send out that blogger pack that has, it had several different sizes of vitolas of the Cuatro Cinco. So I've been able to experience it both with pairings and on its own. And it's just a phenomenal blend. Mm-hmm. It's a phenomenal cigar. I was, you know, I mean, it had, it, I don't know how well it did as far as like top 10 lists last year and all that. Top 10 lists are so tough because I don't get time. I don't have time to smoke everything. And I always find out in March that, man, this was a cigar that I should have smoked last year and made my number two cigar of the year.
Yep.
So I didn't do a list last year. Had I done one and had I smoked this in time, it would have definitely been at the very top end of it. It's a beautiful cigar. It's elegant, but it's aggressive at the same time. It's definitely hitting on all cylinders, man. I don't know what another way to say it.
Yeah. And again, shout out to Hoya for sending, because I think they ended up sending us Vitola in every single Vitola that was released, which is, you know, again, this is not an inexpensive cigar. So that was very, very kind of them. Great people at Hoya Nicaragua. If you haven't had the opportunity to go on the Cigar Safari, that's one you got to check out. We're going to have some really cool video coming out at some point. We've already got some video up that I've been working on of our safari. I'm not sure how we're going to present that, but we'll be showing that for sure. And one of the things they commented when we came through with our cool IPCPR gear was that they've never had a camera crew through the Hoya de Nicaragua factory before. And I think I was really taken aback when they told me back, because I thought, for the cigar industry, especially Nicaragua, Hoya de Nicaragua is such a big part of the industry, has so much history. And to think no one's taken a film crew in there, no one's done a spot on them before, it's kind of almost criminal.
It's too bad you didn't have somebody to host those videos, you know?
It is too bad.
It's unfortunate.
It is. Maybe next year.
Yeah. We'll have to remedy that.
We've
still got a couple audience questions. And there's one thing I want to address that I was just talking about those vintage statements, and it became a bit of a topic here in the chat room between Jeff and Bob Dog. Looked like they were talking about it. As far as Jeff says, vintage statements, like in the wine industry, would be great for cigars. And I'll go back to our show. And if you haven't watched our cigar chat with Claudio from Mombacho, go back and watch it. Claudio has an Italian accent, so at times it's tough when he's talking about things that are, you know, Spanish words, but he's in an Italian accent. It was one of the more insightful shows I felt like we've had, and the way that he talked about it, and it's not just throwing a vintage label on the cigar band, because cigar companies have done that. I know Rocky Patel has vintages, but the difference between the cigar industry and the wine industry is the wine industry has done such a great job of teaching the consumer, of giving consumers, the wine consumers, the tools to learn about their product. That's missing from the cigar industry, I think. And I know we're trying to bridge that gap. It's a lot like what we do with this show, what we do with Cigar Chat, but just the education of the consumer is such a huge thing. I mean, there's guys who smoke cigars, you know, they're at cigar lounges every day, and there's a lot about cigars that they don't know. I mean, when you go on these cigar safari trips, and I'll get off my soapbox here in a minute, but you go on these trips, you realize what goes into making one cigar. And then you stop complaining about the MSRP when you realize how much goes into it. That's all I wanted to touch on with that. A question here from, this is a Rob-specific question from Eric Johnson. And Eric, again, thanks for the questions, man. You're hitting us up with questions every week. We appreciate it.
He's killing it.
Yeah, absolutely. He says, Rob, I haven't heard of the Jameson Caskmate series. What kind of stout notes are you getting out of it, and is it worth a bottle purchase? I talked a little bit about the notes that you're getting. They'll talk, and if you go to their website, again, jamesonwhiskey.com, they have a lot of information there. And they talk about some of the tasting notes that you're going to get. You'll get some, a touch of hops, some cocoa beans, marzipan, and charred oak. The charred oak is definitely there. And the charred oak is, you're going to get that in pretty much just about every whiskey that you try, really.
Yep.
But it's almost like I was talking about body, and maybe that's a nice way of giving that term body a bit more of an exact description. It's that charred oak. It's a bit heavier. It's not, and I expected it to be much darker in color, but it's not than the regular Jameson. So it's a little bit different. If you like Jameson, Eric, if you like the regular Jameson, then I think the Caskmates is definitely worth a bottle purchase. And I think it's relatively inexpensive, $28-$29. I don't think it's expensive at all.
Wow.
If you're expecting it to taste like a stout, you'll be let down. It's got just essences of flavors. It's not an overpowering thing, which I think is good, because if it was an overpowering taste of stout, I don't think that would be very good.
No,
but it just brings out some of that earthy. There's a little bit of coffee notes in there. There's a little bit of cocoa, a little bit sweetness on the finish, but just more body to that regular Jameson. It kind of takes that Jameson and boosts it up a little bit, in my opinion. So that's just to answer that question there for Eric. What were you going to say there, John, as you would take a sip of your whiskey there?
I think I was going to talk about one of the guys that I know in who is a big whiskey collector. His name's Barry. He's been on the show as a guest when we did the it was like the 2.0 super fancy highfalutin tasting, and he pulled out some pretty highfalutin stuff. He's actually of Irish descent, and he's big on Irish whiskey. And I hooked him up with, because he said he smokes a lot of Cuban cigars, and he hadn't smoked a lot of Nicaraguan cigars. So of course, you know, whenever I hear that, I think, okay, well, prepare yourself, because I'm going to blow you up now. And so he's kind of been working through a Nicaraguan sampler pack. And one of the cigars he tried, I think I gave him the, it was either the Nomad C207 or the S307. And
the C207.
I think it's legit. I'm pretty sure it was the 207. And he said that it is one of the best cigars he's ever smoked, period. And he's already asking me where he can get more. And I said, well, that's just an example of how I think Nicaraguan tobacco in the past has maybe gotten a bad rap, because now he tries this, you know, really, and Fred is really good at blending a very nuanced but yet full-bodied taste experience in a cigar. And he said it was just amazing, and the amount of profile changes and just how rich the cigar was. And I was just sort of taken by, you know, introducing a guy who's, you know, his depth in whiskey is like 10 times what mine is. But I got the opportunity to introduce him to the tobacco side of things and just open that door and open his eyes a little bit to what different tobaccos in the world can produce. And that was kind of a cool experience, I think, for me.
Yeah, absolutely. It is pretty cool to find somebody, and it can be someone who enjoys whiskey or they enjoy beer. I'm at the point where, and I'll, there's a question that's related to this. I'm kind of like just completely – My world is surrounded by beer at the moment. And I like the fact that we're doing some of these shows with whiskey. So it kind of takes me out of that beer frame of mind. But I like to introduce people to stuff that they haven't tried before. I've been doing a lot of beer trades, and I'm sending a lot of people Pliny the Elder double IPA from Russian River, because it's a tough beer to find anywhere else in the country. I'm lucky because I can drive, well, an hour and a half, 2 hours, and I can buy just about as much as I want. And anybody else, if they find it anywhere, they can only buy one or what have you. So I've been doing a lot of that, and it's fun because I get to introduce them to something that they haven't tried before. And in return, they send me something that's, you know, maybe they've got some local brews that are really good. I think on a previous show we did, I featured a stout from Canada that was sent to me by a member from Cigar Federation. So it's really, really cool that you can kind of exchange ideas like that. It's one of the things I like about this, the community that we put together on Cigar Federation. I know you were talking about something different, but I'm bringing it back to the site. It's definitely really cool to be able to do that. Question here from Jeff Madre. This is for both of us, and this is in reference to the Cuatro Cinco. He says, what is your preferred pairing? Because we've done two shows, the Irish whiskeys or the seasonal beers. Now, I'm going to speak. I'll answer first and let you think about it a little bit, John. I think these Irish, the Irish. Well, it's not Irish whiskey for you. It was you did regular whiskey, or you did some Japanese and some Scotch. For me, the Irish whiskeys dominate, man. Every single one of these pairings was really good. And to say that the standard Jameson was a distant third, that may be a bit misleading, because it was still a damn good pairing.
Yeah,
I'm stunned by the Green Spot pairing. I didn't think it was going to be that good, frankly, because I've had the cigar, I've had the Green Spot. I didn't know that they were going to play together the way that they did. I thought it was going to be more of an oil and water situation, but it's they pair so nicely, where you get that delicate flavor and you finish with that crisp, clean, citrusy that citrusy sweet note, and then to jump right back into the cigar, it's just it's almost like your palate is awakened after everything. I'm repeating myself now, but this Irish whiskey pairing for me has just been just completely top notch. How about you?
Yeah, I'm going to echo a lot of what you said. I mean, I really, really enjoyed the beer pairing, and I think that there are a lot of beers that I could pair up against this Quattro Seco with the Due de Ciel or a lot of different stouts and porters. I even think a Scotch ale would just go really, really well. And yet, again, it just shows the wide range of spirits that and beverages that I think can go with this. I mean, obviously, pop would be a no-brainer, but you know, now I'm thinking like a nice vintage bear or a nice vintage bottle port would be just fantastic, and we might have to approach that at a later date. But the whiskey has just turned out brilliantly, and as you say, it you know, we've gone from something that's very complimentary in all the beer pairings to something that's very contrasting with a lot of these whiskeys, and yet it still worked really well. In fact, in many cases, I agree with you. I think it worked better because it accented that cigar so brilliantly. It refreshed your palate and allowed you to taste some stuff in the cigar that might be getting run over by a really thick stout, because you know, stout does kind of dominate the palate. It doesn't allow your palate to rest between draws, whereas with the whiskey, it cleanses your palate, gets it ready for another puff. And I'm kind of getting into, as you can see, there's not much of the cigar left, and I'm still getting so much flavor off of this cigar. I'm still sipping my whiskeys, and I'm getting just tons of chocolate notes, tons of cedar notes, and it's so rich, and it just goes so well.
So I've got a question, and it's not rhetorical, but it's just more for both of us. Is there something special about this cigar that makes it so versatile, or is it that maybe our vision of pairing is a little bit skewed? Because, and let me kind of explain what I'm thinking here. This is a really good cigar. It's got some spice to it. It's got that that rich backbone of flavor. It's got some sweetness on the finish. But there's a lot of cigars that have that type of profile. Now, maybe this one's better than those. I mean, you could talk about it's got a little bit more flavor. It's smoother. It's not quite as harsh, that kind of thing. And you can get nitpicky in that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of cigars that I think fall into the range that this cigar falls into. Medium strength with a ton of flavor. It's got a lot of richness. It's got some sweetness. It's got some spice. I feel like I've said that about a ton of cigars. Now, is it this cigar specifically that is really versatile, that we can pair it with all these different things? Or are we just kind of maybe have the blinders on a little bit with some of the cigars that we've been trying to pair in the past?
I think it's a little column A and a little column B for me, because I think, you know, if we draw it back to like the Neanderthal, Skip Martin makes a fantastic cigar, makes a ton of fantastic cigars, and they tend to be on the more full plus body spectrum. And because they're so full body, they've got so much flavor going on, it becomes a little bit tougher to sort of overlap the Venn diagram of flavor pairing with the beverage and flavor pairing with the cigar, because the cigar, you know, brings so much to the table. How do you accent that, or how do you contrast that without the cigar just running roughshod all over that beverage? And I think there are a lot of cigars, and I agree with you, you know, I immediately think of like E.P. Carrillo's. There's a whole range of delicious cigars that are in this sort of medium strength but full bodied category. And I think, to me, as we, you know, we've done 62 shows now, I think having a medium strength but full bodied cigar gives you a lot more flexibility in terms of what you compare with. You're still going to run into stuff that's not going to go well. An IPA would probably be just rancid with this cigar. You know, I think a Hefeweizen or even a, Marzen would be terrible, because it would just be so funky with the cigar, it wouldn't go well. And yet, if you stick to spirits, if you stick to rum, if you stick to a stout that's not going to blow your face off, it can play in that pool, because it does hit on a bunch of different flavor maps that are going to play well with the cigar. And I, you know, all props to this Quattro Cinco, because it's a fantastic cigar. But you're absolutely right. There's lots of cigars out there, and we've had them, that play in this category that I think would go really, really well with a variety of different beverages.
Yeah, absolutely. I wasn't taking anything away from the cigar, because I think it's just fantastic. But I was just mainly, I guess, speaking more on the idea of pairing in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you talk about cigars that fit this profile, I think of the collective, the Cigar Federation collective that was blended by the guys from Ezra Zion. That's a fantastic blend. And we've never featured that on the show. I think maybe we should do that because I think
we should.
We could find some really nice pairings. And that cigar is, there was only one run of those cigars. It was like 2 years ago. And you can
truly
still buy
limited.
Them. But no, you can still buy them. I mean, they're still.
But once they're gone, they're gone.
Well, absolutely. That's not going to be remade. But what I'm saying is those cigars have been aging the entire time. And it's a it's been a great smoke for the last year and a half. So it was a little bit sketchy at the beginning, but the last year and a half, that thing is, it's aged so well. So maybe that's a show or two or three shows worth doing, frankly. That's tough because it's a Cigar Federation blend, so it makes it look like we're tooting our own horn, even though I had nothing to do with the blend, neither did you.
And I get
nothing out of it if anybody buys any, neither do you, so there's that. But again, not taking anything away from this blend because I do think it's phenomenal. I just think that when you're approaching pairing, maybe don't approach it in a way where you feel like there's such set rules. Well, since this is a heavy cigar, I need to go with a really heavy peated scotch or, a cask strength whiskey. It's not necessarily the case because this green spot is neither heavy nor cask strength. And it was fantastic. So I guess that was the main thing I wanted to get at. We've got one more question here and it's very Rob specific. And we can get into it here in a minute if you don't mind. But anything else you want to tackle before I take that on?
I don't think so. I mean, it'd just be football and baseball talk. So let's keep on point with the topic of the show.
Well, this is way off topic of the show, but I'm going to ask it anyway. This is from Aaron Merrill. And Aaron, thanks for the question, man. He says, so Rob, how far down the brewing rabbit hole have you fallen? and I've talked about brewing, and I'm probably going to talk about it more here, and I'm sure we'll probably start another podcast where I'm talking about brewing, and maybe John will I can get John to start brewing too, so we can have an international brewing show, maybe the first international brewing show online, who knows. This is, what made you start in the first place, and where do you get your info and recipes? So Aaron, thanks for the question. And if you ask anybody that is close to me in any way, you will know that I have fallen headfirst. I'm so far down the rabbit hole that, Alice is so far in my rearview mirror that I don't even know, how to describe it. Alice being, Alice in Wonderland, which that's where the whole rabbit hole thing comes from. But, I'm knee deep, head first, whatever cliche you want to say, I am completely absorbed in home brewing. What made me start in the first place? Well, my love of craft beer was kind of started with this show, really, and has taken on a life of its own over the last year and a half. And John, you've seen that transformation, and you've kind of followed me down that hole as well. Mm-hmm. We have access to different things, but it's funny. A couple of my favorite beers come from Canada, so who knows? So that's kind of what made me start. I just felt like doing it. It's a lot of people will start and stop and say, hey, I don't really have time to do it anymore. For me, I've always been the idea of not having time for something that you want to do. That's bullshit to me. I mean, everybody's busy, but if there's something that you want to do, make time for it. Make it a priority. I mean, this Saturday, I'm brewing my first all grain batch, and that's what I'm doing on Saturday. And I've let my wife know that's what I'm going to do. And she says, well, she's going to help me. She'll be kind of my brew assistant, which is kind of awesome. And where do I get my info and recipes? I get everything online. I've been lucky enough to be added into a few different home brewing groups on Facebook that are full of guys who have a lot more experience than I do. And they're really, really helpful. There's a ton of information online. There's actually a pretty good thread going on Cigar Federation. There's a few guys who are doing some home brewing there as well. I've only brewed three batches. My first batch was a brown ale. That's the only one I've tasted so far. And from a technical standpoint, I feel like the beer was pretty good. It had good color. It had good clarity. It had good head retention. It didn't taste very good, but I think I know why. I know why it didn't taste very good. There was a few mistakes that I made that I didn't realize I was making at the time. I've brewed an IPA that is currently bottle conditioning. Sunday will be week two of the bottle conditioning. I'm going to let it sit for another week. and I actually split that out to do an IPA, and I put some grapefruit in a couple of gallons of that. And I tasted it before I bottled it, and I'm pretty excited about how that's going to turn out. And the day that I bottled that, I also brewed a chocolate milk stout that's currently fermenting, and then it's going to go into stage two fermentation where I'm going to add some cocoa. I don't think it's cocoa nibs. I think it's cacao nibs to get that chocolate flavor. And then I'm going to break that out into a couple of different 1 gallon batches where I'm going to add some peanut butter and some coconut and things like that. Play around, just going to kind of get weird with it. This weekend I'm brewing my first all grain batch, and for all grain, without going into way too much detail, when you start brewing, you get kind of a basic kit, and you're brewing with malt extract, where they do the mash for you, and they go through and they extract all that flavor from the grains and the malt so it saves you a huge step. And you just kind of pour that in. It's a thick, syrupy liquid, and you just stir it in, and that's it. So a brew day for an extract brewer is about 3 hours, depending on, you know, the power of your burner. You know, I've been doing a lot of stuff inside, so I've just been boiling. And you're boiling 5 gallons of water, which takes a long time. Mm-hmm. And all grain, it's a different beast. I had to buy new equipment, which I bought it on Craigslist. And I got a screaming deal, and I'm happy about that. But I go out, I have the grains. So I'm going to do my own mash where I extract I get the sugars and the proteins from those grains myself. And I have 100% control as to what goes into my beer, which is really, really exciting. For this first one, I'm just doing a smash, which is a single malt and a single hop pale ale. So I'm just using two row malts, which we've talked about. It's mm-hmm. a very basic pale ale malt. And I'm using a Galaxy hop, which is a little bit different. I mean, I could have used Cascade or something like that, Simcoe or something that's very basic. I wanted to go with Galaxy. It's an Australian hop that's got some passion fruit flavors and some grapefruit notes and things like that. And this is my own recipe. And I've used there's a program called Beersmith that helps you determine what the outcome is going to be when you enter, what grains you're going to use and what malt or what hops you're going to use and when you're introducing those hops into the boil and that kind of thing. It's a lot of fun, man. I'm geeking out to the point where I spent a couple hours last night just reading about yeast.
Nice.
So yeah, I found that thing, and cigars have been that thing for me too. That thing that you find that you just want to geek out on, this is it for me. Like I feel like whiskey was that for you. I mean, the way that you talk about whiskey, I feel like in a couple of months I'm going to be able to talk about beer that way, and with that same amount of passion. So I love it. This is kind of a Rob moment here, but I'm really excited to do my first all grain batch this weekend.
Double R Brewing coming to a beer store near you soon, maybe.
But, I'll just between you and me and the four people who are listening, I actually already, I in the event that I ever do have my own brewery, I already have the name, I already have the website, I already have all that stuff. I haven't trademarked it yet, so I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it's not Double R Brewing because that actually already exists, unfortunately.
Of course it does.
It was the first thing I looked at, but it already exists.
So I'm gonna rein it back in. I love hearing you talk about beer because, you know, I think the great thing in the industry is sharing passions, you know, whether it's brewing or whether it's whiskey or whether it's cigars. It's always fun to hear somebody else talk about a new passion they're sort of working with. And you know me, I love and I could certainly chase that rabbit hole if I get a house in a basement. I mean, who knows where that could go. Talking about some of the shows we got coming up here soon. Of course, we got Fred Rui. We mentioned tomorrow night, so that's going to be a great show. Fred's, you could do a 3-hour show with Fred, never get bored. You guys are going to have the boys from L'Atelier on March 28th. That's going to be a great show. We're going to have Coop on. We talked a little bit about that for our Soda Pop 3.0. Coop, I think, has been really looking forward to that show. That's kind of in his wheelhouse. He loves doing pop pairing, so we're going to do that on March the 30th. And then we're going to be back with What Embargo is going to be doing some Avanos and white wine on April 4th. We're going to have Johnny Brook from Drew Estate. We're going to do a spotlight on Drew Estate on April 6th.
That'll be fun.
We're going to have Claudio on in mid-April. And then I think maybe We should be able to, because you're going to have a game on April 20th. So it'll be me and Logan doing a little tea pairing.
Nice.
But I think we've got a slot on April the 27th, the end of April, where we might be able to fit in that collective and do a little collective show. I think that might be a good spot for it. So we've got a lot of guests coming up on the shows.
Yeah, you've been crushing it, dude. We've got stuff booked out for months, which is awesome. And just the beer thing, I wouldn't have gone that far into it, but you know, someone asks a question and you have to do what the audience wants.
Hey, nothing against you. I love hearing. I could listen to you talk about beer because it sounds fantastic to me. I'm looking forward to potentially getting into that.
Yeah, don't. Well, I'm saying don't even start. But it's one thing I'll say, and we say this to new members of Cigar Federation when they talk about buying a humidor. And it's, I mean, obviously it depends on what your budget is, but don't commit too much to something small.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you feel like it's something that you're going to kind of go head over heels with. I remember when I started with cigars, it was like, oh, I need to get a 50 count humidor. I need to do this. Just don't even mess around with 50 count, man. Just jump right into the 200 count. Yep. 'Cause you know, you're going to fill it up. And I've kind of gone the same path with brewing. I feel like I made some good choices, but there's some things where I'd go back and just not spend money on that and just buy this instead. I had no idea that I was going to do three batches of extract brewing where it's, I mean, you just get a kit. They send you a box. It's got everything in it. There's directions and you just follow. And now I'm doing a batch that is, I came up with, and it's a pretty standard recipe, but it's my recipe. And I decided when I'm going to put my bittering hops and when I'm going to put my flavor hops and my aroma hops in and how much they're going to be. And dude, this Beersmith program is freaking sweet. I can tell you, like right here, I'm going to tell you this right now. Just give me 1 second while the program opens.
Drop some knowledge.
No, I'm not going to drop any knowledge, but I'm going to tell you for my Galaxy Smash, because it's all Galaxy, it's going to be, let's see. The original gravity is going to be 1,058, which I need to learn how to say that. And my estimated final gravity will be 1,012, which will give me an alcohol content of about 6%. There's going to be 43.1 IBUs in my beer. And the SRM is 3.6, which is really light. That's the coloring. Mm-hmm. So it's just by entering the amount of grain that I'm using when I'm putting in these hops, I can get an idea of exactly how this beer is really going to taste, assuming I do everything right, which I probably won't. But I just think it's really cool that I can type this stuff in and say, well, I want to put in an ounce. I want to put in a half ounce of bittering hops at 60 minutes of the Galaxy. But if I were to put, you know, 1 ounce, how would that change the outcome of my IBUs? And it's like, yep, it makes such a huge difference. But to me, that's just really, really interesting. So anyway,
so many levers to pull.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, man. And this is as basic as it gets. It's one malt and one hop. That's it. I'm not messing around with anything else. And as soon as I start messing around with anything else, it's just going to be crazy.
It's going to get crazy. Yeah. So, make sure to tune in tomorrow night with Fred Rui. Get your questions in. I think there's going to be a ton of giveaways. I don't know if I think we still have a Nomad winning rule, but boy, if I get my hands in some more Nomads, and maybe I've heard a rumor there might be a cover giveaway, and
I can either confirm or deny.
There you go. So if you haven't checked out the making of the cutter, check it out on Facebook. Go to Nomad Cigars. Yeah.
It's so cool.
It's so freaking cool. We appreciate everyone who's tuned in live. We appreciate all the podcast listeners who have stuck with us. Appreciate you listening to the show and checking us out week over week. We'll be back next Wednesday. Make sure to get your questions in for the show. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less.